A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS-certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a one-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
When our healing isn't met, one of the most painful parts of healing is realizing the people we love might not want to heal with us. You start doing this work, unlearning old patterns, setting boundaries, naming your pain, and then you look around and realize they're not coming with you. They're not listening, they're not interested, or worse, they're digging in even deeper. And it hurts. Because when someone doesn't acknowledge your healing, your growth, or your truth, it can feel a lot like being rejected all over again. Sometimes it's subtle. A loved one deflects every time you try to share what you're learning. Sometimes it's blatant. They mock therapy, avoid accountability, or act like your boundaries are personal attacks. Sometimes it's just silence, and that silence can be deafening. Why it hits so deep? This isn't just frustrating, it's activating, because for many of us, it mirrors the same painful dynamics we experienced growing up, having our emotional world ignored, feeling like the deep one in a room of people who stayed surface level, being the truth teller in a family that preferred denial, holding the weight of awareness while everyone else pretended things were fine. It can re-trigger the belief I'm too much, or if they loved me, they'd meet me here, or even worse, maybe I'm wrong for wanting more. But their unwillingness to grow is not proof that you're asking for too much. It's proof of their own discomfort with the work you've had the courage to face. What's actually in your control? The hardest truth of all. You can't make someone meet you in the work, no matter how gently you guide, how many books you recommend, or how clearly you try to communicate your pain. It won't land unless they're ready, and they might never be. But here's what you can do. You can keep healing anyway. You can become the safest person in the room, even when no one joins you there. You can influence others not by force, but by embodying the change you wish to see. And maybe, just maybe, they'll feel that shift. But even if they don't, it's not a reflection of your worth. Their resistance doesn't mean you're wrong. Their silence doesn't mean you're unlovable. You're allowed to outgrow what hurt you. You're allowed to evolve even when others stay the same. And your healing will never require anyone else's permission. So some food for thought. When have you felt the most alone or unseen in your healing journey? What emotions or limiting beliefs come up for you when your healing is ignored or dismissed? What childhood experiences does this mirror for you? And what might shift for you if you stop waiting for someone to join you and gave yourself permission to keep going anyway? A couple of additional things I was thinking about as it relates to this. One is the grief that comes up around this, like the grief of outgrowing somebody, which is not just about, you know, like missing who they are, but also, you know, mourning and grieving who they're not able to or willing to become. And I think that often doesn't feel like grief. I think often it feels like guilt or self-doubt or shame or even anger and resentment. And so for me, I feel like I've had this experience of like healing while still being immersed in the environment that caused me the harm, you know, especially like getting sober so young and starting this journey so young. It wasn't like I just like outgrew my family, but was like evolving and breaking the cycle while still like being very much in the midst of it. And I think that like created like a particular, like a painful kind of like dissidence of like seeing the truth of my childhood, not just like in hindsight, but still while being attached and tethered to my parents, you know, like still hoping to be seen and still trying to like navigate the emotional chaos of their untreated alcoholism and denial. And so this grief of outgrowing them and this pain of when your healing isn't met, you know, it's still like ongoing and still shows up in waves and shows up when they like almost meet me, you know, or almost acknowledge that something's real. And so it like brings up this, it's like a hope hangover, right? Like of maybe this time, you know, and like followed by like, nope. And I also think that there's, you know, a particular type of grief associated with my mom. I think that the fantasy of like one day, maybe she'll come back to me. It's not irrational, you know, it's like a human response. And I think that for so many of us, we were conditioned to prioritize connection over authenticity, or to prioritize connection over our own best interest. And so when we grow in ways that threaten the status quo, you know, our nervous system registers that as danger. Our nervous system registers that as being unsafe. And so I think as a result of that, that's often when we might start to unconsciously sabotage our healing, you know, and dialing back our progress and slipping back into old patterns and behaviors. And the self-sabotage that I experienced, like the functional freeze that I went into, and the difficulties with my finances, the difficulties that I've had in trying to adult, you know, like those aren't just like random blocks. I think that they are a reflection of trying to heal and grow in a cycle, in a system that is still very much trapped in the dysfunction that feels like if I'm fully free, like what happens? You know, I'm alone. So it's like really like letting go of this fantasy of that one day they're going to meet me, letting go of that illusion, which is really painful and lonely, but also opens me up to relationships with people who are able to meet me as my healing self. So something that hits really hard for me. And yeah, every time I choose myself and choose to let go of the belief that like maybe like one day that's me acting from a position of somebody who's like choosing that they are inherently worthy and valuable and lovable, instead of living in that place of that child who's just like hoping to be chosen by her parents, like hoping to be chosen by the people who won't choose me, not because they don't want to, but because they're not capable of. So that's my food for thought.
This is exactly where I'm at right now. Very alone, very, very, very alone. And it's grieving. And it's, I guess, regulating. My nervous system is in overload in terms of having to feel that aloneness again and having to deal with the emotions that I had to deal with as a child alone again, which is, you know, I'm coming here because the support system that I had within, I've just realized it's not helpful. It's not, they don't understand. It's almost harmful. I mean, I've been basically called crazy for some of the things that I've learned within ACA, and I understand it's too much for most people to look at. I get it. You know, most of our pain and our drinking, it comes from trauma, and it's a lot to look at. I mean, I spend a lot of nights crying, just crying, you know, from the pain of it all. And there is no one. My entire world was surrounded by, you know, I don't have any family really. And my entire family was, and part of the exit costs of AA is that they're gone. They're just gone. All those people that were telling you that they loved you, telling you that they were there for you, telling you, you know, that they're just gone. And so I felt so incredibly alone, and having to deal with those emotions. I understand that I have chosen dysfunctional friendships because that mimicked my childhood relationships. I don't know what good relationships look like. I don't know what functional, supportive friendships, relationships look like. You know, I have an idea, but I don't know that I've ever really experienced them myself. Like, most of the time I choose the emotionally unavailable, shaming, distant friendships and partners. And I'm realizing it, you know, but until I can figure out how to not do that, I'm basically alone because I don't know how to not fucking do it. So it's sad and I'm lonely. And so that's why I'm here. And I need to get on here more often, you know, even if it's just Zoom. I have my ACA meetings, but I'm sad. And I understand that this is part of my childhood, my 13-year-old self that wasn't able to express that sadness, that had no safe place to go to with that sadness, that had no one to hold her and say that it was okay to feel that sadness. So I had to fake it like everything was okay. And I've done that. And I'm 46 years old and I can't fake it anymore. I can't fake it. I can't. That's all I got. Thanks, everyone.
When I first got sober and came back home, I think my family, they were shaking in their boots a little bit. Because I wanted to talk about things of substance. I wanted to talk about what went on in our family. I wanted to talk about the truth. And that was a little terrifying for everybody, but I wouldn't let up. So, and there was a lot of like, oh, Teresa, that's in the past. You know, my mom would always say, you know, when are you going to let it go? Can't you just let it go? A lot of scrambling just to keep me quiet. And that was really, really painful. It was like, I'm never going to be seen. They're never going to see me. They're never going to love me. They're never going to appreciate me for the person that I know I am. I'm never going to have any connective relationships with them. And I'm never going to hear any of them hold themselves accountable and look at me and say, I'm sorry for how I treated you. There's never going to be that space opened up where we could just see each other for the people that we are rather than the roles that we had to play. And making the decision to go no contact, in a way it was easy, but in another way it was really devastating because it was like, okay, this is it. That this is not to say that the door is closed and nothing, you know, from here on out can ever happen. I just don't hang on to you know, that false hope of wishing anymore. And so it's just been this process of letting go a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And I'm at the very, very end of the letting go, to where I have my life and I don't have that. I don't have a family. I don't have a group of people around me that will call and check on me, or that I can call and check on them, to feel that support from, to just even feel valued and to be a part of. So, you know, and one of the things that I was reflecting on in my session with my IFS therapist today, being our last time that, you know, together, is now I get to create that. I get to create what I know I deserve. I get to create a family of choice, where I get to practice the discernment of who gets to be around me. And I didn't, you know, growing up with my family, I didn't have that choice. I didn't have a choice whether or not somebody was treating me like shit or scapegoating me or gaslighting me. I had no choice. I had to live in that. And there's a God, but trying to go back and trying to make these people see me. Yeah, just the little girl in me just finally letting go, just finally letting go, saying that's a dry well, and you're just never ever going to get what you need from that dry well. But I don't feel alone today like I did when I first decided to go no contact, because I know I have the strength, because I've continued my entire life, I have continued to show up again and again and again. And when people thought that I was going to walk away with nothing, I walked away with a handful of whatever it was that I needed, that came from love and came from just I don't know. There's just a light within me that, and I think it's within all of us, that never goes out. It gets covered up, it gets dim, but it never ever goes out. And I think that's what continues to lead me. And I think that's what continues to attract the people that I need into my life. For as many times as I've wanted to leave the shit show, because it just digs up stuff that I did not know was there. And parts of me are just like, I don't fucking want to look at that. Let's just bury that again right now. I don't want people to see that. I don't want to be that vulnerable. No, we're just done. Just walk away. But there's something that says, no, if you don't walk through this, it's just going to wait for you. So keep showing up. This was such a good topic today. Yeah, I'm grateful for all of you and helping me continue to grow.
It's kind of reflecting on this reading, you know, and what happens when it's not all the parts of you that seem to want to move in that direction and change of life. Like, there's so much within myself that, like, I see the progress, I see the move, and then there's parts of me that are just frozen. And, you know, for the last few weeks, it's been that internal dialogue of, like, why and self-worth and self-love, and, like, I can see all the things that I'm doing, and it's just this one little part that's just still not right there with, like just standing up for myself. You know, that part of it. And I finally just, with therapy and doing, you know, EMDR and kind of going in through processing some of these things, it's finally, these memories are starting to pop up, and I found just one in particular spot, you know, and this is when I'm a kid, 12, 13 years old, going into seventh grade. It's a new school, you know, it's a different part of town, you know, and just outside somewhere, like along the grounds of the school. Kid, I don't know, have no idea who he is to this day, never knew his name, barely kind of saw his face. But, you know, he catches me and he pins me up against the fence, and he's just taking his shoulder and he's just like driving it, you know, into my chest. And there's my friends standing around me going, do something, hit him back, do something. And it's like, I've been in boxing, I've done all these different things, I'm in sports. And it's like, I can't just defend myself. I can't stand up for myself in that spot. That comes from my childhood, where my sisters, my grandmother, all of these people essentially never gave me that value of self, you know, where they told me I was worth defending by defending me from my sister bullying me, my grandmother, you know, disciplining us the way that she did. The things that happened in between that were so dysfunctional left me with that lack of sense. And now it's almost like, as I rehash through these things, I can literally, like, that's what it feels like in my current situation. You know, X is healing, doing whatever her process is as she's doing it. It's not in the same. Our paths have grown different. You know, our healing journeys are different, even though we want the same outcome, and that's to just get rid of the shit that's been imprinted on us. You know, and as I look through that, that's what it literally feels like. Is this woman is taking advantage of the situations and knows that I just don't have the strength, and she's just sitting there doing that, and it's literally me looking at myself going, move, do something. Stand up for yourself, you know, and that has been the biggest thing, is looking at myself and going, I don't have to please other people to get self-gratification. You know, that's where those things come from. That's where people pleasing comes from. It's just trying to get those breadcrumbs, trying to get that sense of validation and acceptance that makes it feel like you're worth something, you know, and that's been something that I've been missing within myself for a long time. And that's because I have not been able to hold my boundary and go, that is not okay, and I don't want to do this anymore. You know, for some reason, I have been trapped in that trauma bond, in that cycle for so long. And it's almost like Stockholm Syndrome. The door is open. It's right there. You can just fucking put your toe right on the line, and you can't just fucking walk through the door. Because that means the changes that are to come are going to be real. The things that need to be done at that point, you have no longer... You can no longer make excuses for, because now you've acknowledged them. They're there. They're in your face. They're real. You know, and this is one of the things that I have realized. I can trust myself with other people. I have been strapped to somebody's chest and trusted them to pull a ripcord for a parachute while I'm 10,000 feet in the fucking air. And I just can't look at somebody and go, leave me the fuck alone and get the fuck away from me. I don't want to fuck with you anymore. Like, how hard is that just to stand up for yourself and to do those things? You know, and that's where it is. I'm looking at that kid and it's like, if nobody's going to fucking come help, like, then I got to do it for myself. And that's the hardest fucking thing in the world, is to look at that reflection in the mirror and tell yourself you are worth it and fucking believe it. You know, and that's the thing that I'm working on. And, you know, for once, I've got this letter typed up, and the day that I fly out, I'm going to give my ex an eviction notice, and they have a week to figure it out. And this is the point of where I'm at with my frustration, with my growth, with my progress in the program that I've been working, the things that I've been doing. You know, if I can't do this for myself, then I have not actually applied any of the lessons that I have learned. I can do that without being an asshole. I can do it without being mean. I don't have to fight. I don't have to use shitty words. I just simply need to say, this is not working for me in my space, and I cannot get myself into alignment and be myself authentically with this situation continuing the way that it is. And while I'm gone, you have a week to figure out what you need to do. And if it's not done at that point, then I have to do what I need to do in order to protect myself. And these are things that I would have never been able to realize without like community, you know, without friends and family actually doing the work with me. And I am one of the few that is blessed that my mom has 36 years in recovery. You know, my siblings are open to hearing what I have to say about my experience without, you know, denigrating it, without saying, oh, you know, get over it. Every time that I brought something up, they have been open enough to say, you know, yeah, I hear what you're saying, and that's valid, you know, and I'm sorry you went through that. But it is a healing thing. Like I am blessed in that aspect of it. And then at the same time, like I said, I just beat the fuck out of myself because I just don't feel like it's worth it. And that's the part of it. I feel once I can do that, the rest of my recovery journey, you know, is just going to be that much more efficient and like sweeter as I go through these things. So thank you guys for holding space. Thank you for letting me get this shit out of my head. You know, not telling me I'm crazy, but not telling me to get over it, validating these feelings, you know, and that's the true blessing of this community. So thank you.
All right, shit show ladies. Have you ever had those days where everything just feels so much damn harder than normal and you can't figure out why? I already know the answer to that question is yes. And boy, have I definitely had more than my fair share of those days and totally get just how frustrating this can be. But recently, I've learned that sometimes it's not just stress, lack of sleep, a dysregulated nervous system. It could also be my hormones at play. And that is where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. It's super easy. Any shit show can do it. Just answer a few questions about what you've been going through and where you're at in life. After taking this quiz, you'll get personalized recommendations to help balance your hormones and start feeling better. So I took this hormone quiz myself. The quiz suggested that my body may be overloaded with estrogen, which is affecting me in all kinds of ways. And one of the recommendations that I got was to start taking Hormone Harmony, which helps with bloating, chronic fatigue, weight gain, mood swings, and more. And after adding it to my routine, I've definitely noticed a difference. Now, taking care of your hormones isn't just about feeling good right now. It's also about investing in our healing journey. And so by taking this quiz, you'll learn more about your hormone balance, which will allow you to start making small, intentional changes to support you on this healing journey. Whether it's the Hormone Harmony or another Happy Mammoth product, the quiz helps guide you towards solutions that work specifically for you. So if you're ready to start feeling like yourself again, head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find out the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can also get 15% off your entire first order with my code adultchild at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code adultchild for 15% off today.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Yeah, the first thing I thought of when I heard the reading was, I wasn't as young as you when I got in recovery, but I was 27. And so I was pretty young. And there was this t-shirt that was like at some recovery event or something. And it was black and it had these white stairs kind of painted on it. And it said, when one door closes, another one opens, but these dark hallways sure are a bitch. And it was like, that is exactly how I felt at that time, you know, and it's always kept in, you know, it's always in the forefront of my mind whenever I, you know, kind of grow to the next level and certain things aren't interesting to me anymore, like talking to people about certain subjects or whatever. And I spent a lot of years in AA, and when I left AA, I left AA, and then like 10 years later, I went back for like 2 years. I could not believe what some of the people in AA were doing. I mean, it was just like, one, the lack of growth, and two, some of the dishonest behavior that like really, really long old timers were doing. And we had this drama about a fellowship having to move and the lying and my old sponsor, I said to her, I just can't believe this. This person is outright lying. And she goes, no, it's politics. I'm like, this is a spiritual program. I mean, how can you make that as an excuse for somebody with 35 to 40 years of sobriety as, you know, but yeah, I've always had to keep kind of everything about recovery under wraps in my family altogether. Like I have to make sure, I had to make sure I didn't use any kind of recovery language or anything like that around anybody. And, you know, I always thought that I was the problem, you know, and that it was, you know, that I deserved what I got because there was some inherent flaw in me that I just wasn't recognizing. And if I just went to enough meetings and, you know, worked with my sponsor enough or whatever, I would find out what it was that I was doing that was just so bad. And I just didn't really realize that I was very vulnerable and didn't know it, and super naive and didn't know it. So I would get taken in by people that would, you know, just emotionally in friendships. And then it just takes me back to how long I spent in those rooms with people that really weren't getting any better. And conversely, how much short of time I've spent in this room, just a little over a year, maybe a year and a half, and how much growth in myself and the growth I see in everybody else. I mean, I'm not coming to these meetings and hearing somebody say their same story, da 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 da. You know, I mean, unless they're, you know, a couple of bricks short of a load or something. And there's always going to be a few like that in any kind of group like this. But the people that grow by leaps and bounds. I mean, lately, I haven't been to meetings very much because I just needed to take a break from it. But even when I was coming all the time and I would not come for like a week, the growth in a person in a week was amazing. I mean, astounding. And I just can't say how grateful I am that I found this group. I mean, and I went to ACA meetings for a couple years before I came here too. And, you know, they helped prime the pump, but the growth in this group, it's like nothing I've ever experienced anywhere, but I can totally, totally relate to being very, very lonely for most of my life in sobriety and in recovery, because it's just, what I have found is making friends that aren't in recovery is a lot less lonely for me. Making friends that aren't seeped in all of this stuff. And, you know, while most of my friends are on this journey, having a few that aren't is kind of refreshing, you know, because that's not the subject we're talking about all the time. And, you know, what my family pulled this time or what I'm feeling about that, this or that. It's kind of like just going out and playing and having fun and having friendships that are just based on other interests. And I have a friend right now that all she does is work and think about, you know, her recovery issues. And I was saying, do you have any hobbies? And I didn't even start doing hobbies and stuff like that until 4 or 5 years ago when I went through a program and they said, you need to learn how to play. And I go, play? Never had the luxury of playing. I raised 2 kids by myself. I moved out when I was 15. I've been like working my ass off for years. I've played. And, you know, at the time I looked down on my bed and I had these two little Yorkies and they're like little sumo wrestlers. And I'm like, these little guys have been wanting me to play with them every day for years. And, you know, they're right in front of me going, Mom, play with me, you know? So anyways, I hope what I said made some sense, but the dark hallways, they are sure are a bit.
Yeah, this relates so much to my situation right now. Just like, I guess the thought that just came up to me was, what do I do with my time if I'm not trying to get someone to like catch up with me in growth and recovery? It's like, my divorce is going to happen, you know, soon, I would say within the month. And I'm like, people are like, how are you feeling? And I'm like, I'm excited. But I think this reading was like bringing up for me, you know, I could move forward with deciding I was ready for a divorce once I accepted what was in the reading. But I was like, I spent so much time fighting against that. And then I just think of all of my relationships. And then I think going back to my dad, it's like this fight to be seen. And so I'm excited to not spend tons of my time and energy into that bucket. But I think it is like I'm like, who am I if I'm not doing that? And so it's just like really interesting and exciting and scary, because I also think that just defines all of my relationships. And so I think I'm really scared that in the future, if I find myself there again, but I'm also like, well, I'm here. I'm like, I'm doing the work. I'm in the recovery. I'm like, things will be different. But I think it's still like acknowledging that I need to be aware and keep doing the work. Like, right, this isn't like the end point. Like, okay, like the relationship is over. Like, I'm good. You know, like there's still going to be a lot to do, which I'm excited about. But I also just relate to like the grief. And I think of like the grief that I have of like my dad being gone, and that, you know, I think long ago I kind of let go of the idea of like trying to get him to like see me or see himself or these different things. But now that he's like, he's dead, I'm like, man, that's so much grief that chance isn't there. And that, you know, right, like letting go of trying to bring people on the journey with you. But yeah, there's still hope that they find the path on their own. And so that feels really sad that book is closed. And yeah, I think that, yeah, even just like in grieving the marriage of that, when I think of like what marriage meant to me and certain ideas, and it is like to grow together with someone, and grieving that's not going to happen. Yeah. So that's where I'm at. Thanks.
Yeah. What this brought up for me is that like this healing journey feels like a roller coaster. It's like some days you're up, some days you're down. I have a lot of issues with my dad, and actually getting into all this work has made me realize, on the one hand, how very angry I am with him, which is, I think, just grief in disguise. And I feel guilty a lot of the times. He's turning 82 in a few days. His health has really gone downhill the last few years. So he is like this sorry old man, and he's never really been a father that I could, you know, have some kind of relationship with on an emotional level. And I realized that he's, you know, he's not going to live forever, and I won't have that chance anymore, maybe sooner than later. And then I feel really guilty because I'm learning how to like look at him differently and see that he's also, you know, emotionally broken or whatever. And then on the other hand, I just like want to yell at him and say like, dude, I'm your only daughter, you know, it's, why don't you see me? I'm just so baffled. And I have one friend who's been sober a very long time, and I can really talk to him about this stuff, because you do get alienated from like regular friends. And he's actually met my father, and he said to me at one point, he said, your father's just terrified of you. And that also sort of opened my eyes up, but it doesn't make it better. It's like, you know, he's not the father that I wanted or needed, and he's never going to be that. And it's a really big grief process, and it's really hard. And I feel alone in that, even though I have friends with fucked up dads, it's still, it feels different, like from my situation. So I'm hoping to get some clarity on that at some point before it's too late. Never know. Thanks, you guys, for the.
So this reading was a great reading to hop on the app and read. So I resonated with like feeling like the only one with awareness in the room. And like for the past like week and a half, I've been struggling really hard with like feelings, like old feelings coming up. I got out of a relationship that was 4 years too long because I stayed hoping that the person would change. And I held on to that relationship for a year where we separated, but we're still dating and it didn't serve its purpose while trying to heal at the same time. And getting out of that relationship, I decided to pull what you did with the Bryans and hop into another one. And last night I had a huge like epiphany, right? Like I was falling back into old behaviors, feeling like I wasn't worthy. The guy I was talking to kind of put me on the back burner. And so I sat down with him last night and just ended the situationship because I felt like I was dying inside for a week. So like reading this reading today, like I have to work on self, and it's like so scary. And I feel so alone. Like the only emotion I can keep saying for like the past week is like, I felt so alone, but like, I do know that I have like an amazing network and like everybody has reached out because they knew something was going on, but like my win from yesterday and then seeing that this is like healing those core issues, it brings up like so much stuff from childhood that like I never felt like I was enough. And like him and I both gracefully like parted ways, right? Still gonna be friends because we're both on our own separate healing journeys. But like reading the part where like a person doesn't want to choose to heal with me is like what's hard, because I already feel alone and I just want to be chosen. But I shouldn't, like, I have so much work to do on myself and I'm just really getting started. So I just wanted to join in and say thank you for this reading today. It resonates in so many different areas and I really needed to hear other people say that they feel the same way. So yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I really love this reading too. It's like exactly where I'm at with my mom and my sister, where I like shared very explicitly with them all these problems I see in our family, and they didn't outright reject me, but they have pretty much reacted with silence. And my sister even like made a joke about it that was really hurtful. And it's like completely heartbreaking to imagine them not healing with me because I'm so deeply in touch with the pain that it's caused. And knowing I love them, knowing they're in this pain too is a nightmare. And I wish they could heal with me for their own sake. But yeah, the part about like, no matter how many books you recommend, like I am that with podcasts. I'm like, if you could just hear this one podcast, you'd understand. Of course not. And this morning I was reading this book, Mother Hunger, and there's a section about dissociation. And my sister was always really spacey. And like, it was kind of a family joke that she would like space out and fall out of her chair. But she was also being bullied by my dad and by siblings, and she was dissociating to protect herself. And in this chapter, it said, dissociation is the body preparing for death. It's like, you're that scared as a kid that you don't know what to do. And so your parasympathetic nervous system just like shuts you down. And the thought of my little sister's little body, like preparing her for death because she's being bullied at the dinner table, like absolutely breaks my heart. And if I could go back in time and like scoop her up out of there and run away, I would. And right now she's like starting a family, or wants to start a family, and is so, she's like, get this out of my face, I'm trying to have a baby. And I get it, but I'm like, girl, you're going to repeat this stuff. Like, you have to look at it. But of course, it's not my timeline. It's not, her life is not my life. And yeah, it's really heavy right now. So this reading was perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to share one thing that is like a revelation in my life, and it's basically just Instagram reels, like, you know, is my therapist right now. But So my ex was very on his like healing journey. Like he's gone to therapy since he was like 12 because he had a really dysfunctional mom. You know, he read books on confidence, like all that stuff, had the therapy speech, like was helping me heal. And like he did, but I don't think that was necessarily his intention. And the last guy that I was seeing before him was really similar too, and like had all the therapy speech, like seemed really confident, seemed to be working on himself, was very like open-minded and stuff like that. So now I'm realizing, like, well, I mean, it's not like confirmed, but it does seem like, because I saw this video about people who like lie about healing and like pretend that they're healing and they just use the therapy speech, but they're not actually applying it to like their own lives. So, you know, that's why I stayed with my ex for 3 years when I should have broken up with him in the first month, because like he always promised that change. He always had the right language. He always said the right thing. Like, and, you know, after 3 years, obviously, like there was no change. But the reason that I left is because he did help me grow and change just based on the things he was saying. Like, I joined therapy for the first time. Like, I was reading the books, like I was doing the work. So, you know, it was really helpful, and like I'm really thankful for the relationship. But just, I wanted to say, like, be aware that just because someone says they go to therapy and has like the right things that they're saying doesn't always mean that they are like on the right path, or that they actually care about growing or your growth. Like, at least that's my experience. So yeah, that's all I wanted to say.
Don't let it all go.